I'm Peter Hall, classical host for WNED Classical in Buffalo, New York. And once again, our special guest is Joanne Folletta, who's here to tell us about the next Naxos recording. They've all been so great. Joanne, we usually chat about the CDs featuring the Buffalo Philharmonic, of course, but I know you've made CDs for Naxos with other orchestras, the London Symphony, the Royal Scottish Symphony, the Berlin Radio Orchestra, and, of course, your other home symphony, the Virginia Symphony, for example. But I understand this new CD is a little bit different. It's going to be released by Naxos, of course, but it features a much smaller chamber ensemble and narrators. And it was performed and recorded at the Virginia Arts Festival. So tell us all about it.
I will, Peter. And it's so good to be with you talking about these discs again. Thank you so much. This is a really different one, as you said. It's a different art form. It's a piece by William Walton, one of my favorite composers. Walton was at the forefront of bringing English music back to the world stage, you know, in the beginning of the 20th century. A fabulous composer. And this piece was written for a virtuoso chamber ensemble. I mean, it's just amazingly difficult writing. And poetry by the great British poet Edith Sitwell.
Now, Edith Sitwell, we can say great, and she's also recognized. She is Dame Edith Sitwell, but she's also a little eccentric.
Very eccentric, very avant-garde for the time, very wild. I mean, she came from quite a wild family of writers. Just a sense of the English language that was very beautiful, but in her own way. She relies a lot on sound only, on alliteration, on assonance, and how words actually become music in themselves. So she and William Walton met up in interesting ways, and did this piece together.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. So how actually did Sir William Walton, I don't know if he was Sir at the time, meet Dame Edith Sitwell? I don't know if she was a dame at the time, but anyway, how did they meet up, and how did William Walton come to actually work with the whole Sitwell family?
You know, it's a very fun story. I mean, and he certainly wasn't a sir. He came from a poor background, and he was 16 years old, and he was at Oxford, studying music at Oxford. It was clear he was very, very gifted. And while he was at Oxford, he met a wonderful young man also, but this one was studying literature, Sacheverell Sitwell. And Sacheverell and William became great friends. And Sacheverell proclaimed that Walton was a genius. He said he just knew. I mean, he heard pieces. He heard his piano quartet and said, I have to introduce you to my family. You're the only true genius I know. So he brought William home to the family of crazies, I guess I should say it that way. His brother Osbert and his sister Edith, a great artistic family. They were all writers, and in a kind of flamboyant avant-garde style. They were free thinkers. I mean, I think the family shocked more than a few people in London, but they agreed that Walton was incredibly, very, very special, and he became in part of their family in a sense.
Well, not a bad family to be to be part of by any means.
No.
So he comes home, has dinner, meets the fam, you know, they all get along. But how did they actually sit down and start to collaborate on art together?
Well, I mean, it was actually what seemed like a disaster. Walton failed his exams at Oxford.
Get
Imagine
out.
William Walton failing his exams. And he said to Sacheverell, he says, "Satch, what am I going to do? I can't go back home. I have no money. I have no idea what to do." And Sacheverell said, like probably many a person would say to a friend, "Listen, come and stay with a family for a couple of weeks and give you time to sort things out." Well, William Walton said later that, "I came for 2 weeks and I stayed for 15 years. He lived with them, and I think he lived on the top floor, which was his space, for 15 years. So, of course, in that kind of proximity, they had lots of ideas. Okay, well, let's come up with something. I mean, eventually, of course, Osbert wrote the libretto for one of Walton's great triumphs, Belshazzar's Feast. But he started his collaborations with Edith. And Edith was really, really a character. they got together and put this piece. He accompanied, actually, her poems.
Well, let's talk about these poems. I know we're talking about young people, you know, young artists. It sounds very bohemian, you know.
Yes.
They're all living together and collaborating together. But the work actually is 100 years old this year. But still, I gather, considered avant-garde. So what's the poetry like?
Well, Edith was the kind of poet that was not really interested in being easily understood. She was very flamboyant in her writing. She loved the sound of words most of all, and, you know, the idea of alliteration where you repeat consonants or assonants and vowel sounds. And she, of course, was extremely literate, using words in this that, you know, we all had to look up, but beautiful sounding words like periwigged or philomel or tarlatine, or all of these words, gasconade, all of these words in the English language, but not used regularly. Anyway, she created these poems that are haunting, extravagant, very, very musical. And she wanted Walton to set them to music so that they would become part of the orchestra in a way, and that's what they're like. And she envisioned it for one narrator, herself, and that was how it was presented when they first did it.
Where the satyrs are chattering nymphs with a flattering glimpse of the forest and haunts, all the beauty of marrow and cucumber narrow and Ceres will join in the dance. Where the satyrs can flatter the flat-leaved fruit and the gherkin green and the marrow, sipping Venus, Silenus will settle between us the board and the narrow. See, like palaces hid in the lake, they shake those greenhouses shot by her arrow. Narrow the gardener seizes the pieces like creases for gilding the potting should barrow. There the radish fruits and the strawberry fruits of the nymphs high boots in the glade, tramping and stamping mazurkas, kachorkas and torkas, krakoviks hid in the shade. Where are the haycocks the country nymphs gave up for gowns that are looped over bright yellow petticoats, gaiters of leather and fetters of feather and straw hats for wildering many a leathern bat? There they hay make cows and wines and chows, the dew in the dogs seem but flowers. Pumpkin and marrow and cucumber narrow have grown in the spangled June hours. Melons as dark as gates half on the fountain with thick scored honey, and wrinkled as dark as pen, oral ten Venus, or you grow as Venus are goods, and the rick of things went till the jewels ran. Said Queen Venus, said Venus, will settle between us the nymphs disobedient for store. With my bow and my quiver, each fresh evil lever, for I don't understand it at all!
But you have three celebrity narrators, and I must say three of our favorite people here. The soprano Hila Plitman, I know her Grammy Award-winning CD was with you, and the Buffalo Philharmonic. That fabulous bass baritone Kevin Days, what a voice.
Fantastic.
And the host of Performance Today, our good friend Fred Child. So all people I know that you've worked with a lot, but we have two singers and a classical music host. How did they come together to be a narrator? How did they work together?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, that Edith did this all herself. And in fact, she did it in a very strange way, Peter. She did it through a megaphone hidden behind a curtain. That gives you a sense of what this girl was like. She wasn't an ordinary girl. But anyway, when I was reading the 33 poems, I realized that there was so much in them, different characters, that it would be very interesting to have them in different voice types. And of course, when you have a great singer like Kevin Days, and the richness of his low register, or Hila Plitman, who is an extraordinary singer and actress as well, and Fred, who's a trained musician himself, that all of a sudden the character of these pieces would be enhanced, would be able to sort of be showcased in a different way. So we went ahead with the three of them. I divided them all up, and it was a wonderful experience. I hope Edith would have approved. I don't know. She didn't do it that way, but we did.
Across the flat and the pastel snow, two people go.
And do you remember when last we wandered this shore?
Ah, no, for it is cold-hearted December. Dead the leaves that like asses' ears hung on the trees when last we wandered and squandered joy here.
Now Midas, your husband, will listen for these whispers, these tears for joy's beer.
And as they walk, they seem tall pagodas, and all the ropes let down from the cloud ring the hard, cold bell buds upon the trees, codas of overtones, ecstasies grown for love's shroud.
So in a way, you're almost one of the musicians here yourself, because you're choosing which voice instrument, if I'm making up a term here, it works best with which poem and which music. So you.
That's right. And also what the characters in the poems, because the poems are quite different. Some of them are very funny, really funny. Some of them are kind of sad. They're love songs. Who's speaking? Is it a male voice? It is a woman's voice. Some of them actually have two people speaking in them. So we had to sort of create a little sense of drama in this way. And that was really a lot of fun to put together.
Well, so now we know about the poet, we know about the composer, we know about the three narrators, Hila Plitman, Kevin Days, and Fred Child. So what's left are the chamber musicians. So tell us about them.
Well, it's a mixture of friends, really. I mean, we did it in Virginia. We did it in Norfolk, Virginia. One of the last things I did, really, with the orchestra before I became conductor laureate. So we have some Virginia Symphony people, Rob Cross, percussionist, Debbie Cross, a percussionist. But we also had friends who've been soloists with us, like, you know, Tim McAllister, that wonderful saxophonist, or Julian Schwartz, the great cellist who's played with us. He came to play cello. Todd Levy, clarinet. Robert Alamani played bass clarinet. So it was a collection of people who, some of them knew each other well, some of them were meeting for the first time. It was a hilarious group of people, and they played brilliantly, which is really necessary for this piece, because Walton invested a tremendous amount of thought of how to make this piece come alive with the great music.
So you do have, well, what I used to call a great Rolodex, but so many of our millennial listeners don't know what a Rolodex is. You have a great contact list on your phone, and you're able to call in the best as needed. And it's actually a world premiere recording. Now, I have to ask you, though, there are some pieces I understand that have never been heard before.
That's right. You know, and that's what makes it a world premiere recording. The piece was first presented as a piece called Facade and Entertainment. And it had 21 of their favorite poems. I suppose that Edith and William Walton picked them together out of her vast amount of poetry. And that was the premiere in 1922. In the Sitwell House, a very, very modest world premiere. But later on, and this is quite a bit later, in 1979, Walton was celebrating his 75th birthday. And he was not really in the place in his life, he wasn't well, to write a new piece for his 75th. So people mentioned to him, well, why not go back to something you did earlier and maybe do something different with it. So he wrote some new music for eight more poems. And they became a further entertainment, Facade number two. And there were four additional numbers that somehow never were performed. So we thought, this is a time to celebrate, since it's the 100th anniversary of the world premiere, the first performance. Let's bring all the poems back together. And that's what we did. So it is a world premiere, and some very beautiful things that people will be hearing for the first time.
So I understand this is actually a world premiere recording in the fact that in addition to the original collection of poems and music, which were performed but not recorded, they were premiered in 1922, but then you've added several extra pieces that the composer and poet wrote but were not in that first performance. I do have to ask you a question I know I've asked you before. You are known for premiering works that have never been heard before. This is not new to you, but what's it like to sort of take on that responsibility that I'm sure no one alive remembers that first performance back in 1922. So basically, this is all brand new to everybody. How do you approach that?
You know, I think that was part of the excitement that we were creating creating a way of thinking about these pieces. Now, it's certainly not the only way, and people will do it in all different ways, but we were trying to find what was best for us as a group. And it was constantly changing in rehearsal, Peter, because we had rehearsal and performance, constantly changing, especially with the narrators. They were trying to decide what words they should emphasize. Hila Plitman especially was gifted with different accents. So she actually sometimes sounds like a Russian diva when she's speaking and sometimes like a little girl and others. So they were constantly changing their approach, and it was amazing to see that. The language, of course, I mean, the words are exactly what Edith wrote, but they interpreted them in their own way.
The currants, moon-white as mother bunch, in their thick bustled leaves were laughing like punch, and rooched as their country waterfalls. The cherried maids walk beneath the dark walls, where the moonlight was falling thick as curd, who the cherry branches half unheard. Said old Mrs. Bunch, the crop-eared owl, to her gossip, if once I began to howl, I am sure that my sobs would drown the seas with my ohs and my ahs and my oh dear me's. Everything wrong from cradle to grave, no money to spend, no money to save. And the currant bush began to rustle as poor Mrs. Bunch arranged her bustle.
So just to keep it straight in my mind, there's the group called Facade One. These are from the original 1922 performance. And then there's another group called Facade Two, eight poems. Right. And which ones are those again?
Those are the ones that Walton wrote afterwards when he was asked much later, when he was 75. Can you imagine going from being 16 or 18 years old and then revisiting this work at a much later age? And you know, I think that the later poems do have a certain sadness to them, a certain melancholy, let's say, maybe of someone who's, you know, not at the start of his career anymore and just lived through a world war and you know, sees things differently now. But we put them all together. We even put in the four pieces that didn't make either one of those collections.
So as you looked at the music and worked through it with all of the performers, you were able to see some sort of development in Walton or change from his boyhood music to his mature music?
I was. You know, in a sense, he used a slightly smaller group for the later ones. It's almost as if things got pared down to the essence of what he was trying to say. And the poems that he chose for that were to me some of the saddest ones, and I love that about you know, this sort of cycle of life, you know, that he was in a very different place, but he really enjoyed the fact, and he laughed about this. He said, "Well, the world premiere was given in the living room in Chelsea of the Sitwell family, and this performance is being given at the Royal Albert Hall in the Proms." So coming from nowhere, you know, that poor young man who just had failed out of Oxford, coming to be one of the most lauded, most beloved, most respected composers in the world.
Just a few more questions. So the language of Edith Sitwell, like Edith Sitwell herself, is extravagant, one word, florid, another word. So how do you advise that people listen to this blend of language and music?
Well, they have to allow themselves to be all right with not understanding every word. And it's a sense of, you know, almost immersing yourself in a sound world, a sonic world, where the voices are actually part of the orchestra. They're contributing, in a sense, of course, a meaning, but also equally important is simply the sounds of the consonants. You know, and I mentioned she loved alliteration, and you'll hear a lot of that, you know, repetition of consonants. So to allow yourself to just be immersed in this very unusual sound world, which is helped by the fact that in the program notes and the liner notes, all of the poetry will be there so that you can actually look at it. You might have to look up a few words like I did. And Edith also loved mythology. So there are a lot of references to mythological creatures and stories from mythology. It is just beautiful. It's haunting. And, you know, the poems are quite different. The one is very spooky, and Hila recites this. It's called Four in the Morning. There's also one very, very funny called Scotch Rhapsody, with all of the kind of like little snappy rhythms of the Scotch music. Love, a tragic love story by the lake, in which two of the narrators have a conversation back and forth about their, you know, love story that never really became their lives, and or silly. I mean, Kevin has a wonderful polka, of which he really brings out the humor of it. So I think it's one of these things that we just have to just let ourselves be sort of astonished by this new sound world.
La, 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 la. See me dance a polka, said Mr. Wag like a bear, with my top hat and my whiskers sat, tra-la-la, trap the fair. Where the waves seem chiming, haycocked, I dance a polka there. Stand Venus as children in the gay fronts, maroon and marine and sere. To see me fire my pistol, through the distance blue as my coat. Like Wellington, Byron, the Marquis of Bristol, Busby, great trees float. While the wheezing hurdy-gurdy of the marine wind blows me, to the tune of Annie Rooney sturdy, over the sheets of the sea. And bright as a seedman's hatchet, with zinnias, candytuft's chill, is Mrs. Marigold's jacket, as she gapes at the indoor still. Break on in the box of the sailor, blue as the decks of the sea. Nelson awoke, crowed like the coxswain, back to the dust sank he. And Robinson Crusoe, Russo, the bright and foxy beer. But he finds fresh eyes and the negress that smiles, the poxy doxy dear. As they watch me dance the polka, said Mr. Wag like a bear. In my top hat and my whiskers flat, tra-la-la-la, tramp the fair. Tra-la-la-la-la, tra-la-la-la-la, tra-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Now, the official title of the CD, if we're searching for it, is?
The Complete Facades. Containing all three of these, the facade and entertainment, the first one, a further entertainment, the second one, and then four additional numbers, but we're just the complete facades, and it's with the Virginia Arts Festival, a wonderful orchestral group that accompanied these three stars, Hila Plitman, Kevin Days, and Fred Child.
So I can't wait to hear this new CD, but I have to ask you, you know, what's coming up next with Naxos? And I'm assuming, I'm kind of hoping that it's something with the Buffalo Philharmonic?
Definitely it is. We've got a lot of Naxos projects here in Buffalo. We have two that are just getting to the end of their preparation and will be out, I hope, in a few months. One is a fantastic CD of Scriabin, Alexander Scriabin, his poem of ecstasy and his second symphony, brilliantly played by the orchestra. And the other one is an American concerto disc of two concertos that we did here in Buffalo. Piano Concerto by Adolphus Hailstork. Great work. I mean, I'm so thrilled that we got to record this. This is a world premiere recording of the Piano Concerto, and it's one of the greatest piano concertos of our time. And on that disc is also Violin Concerto by Danny Elfman. Danny, of his rock and roll fame and the movies and his television shows. But he wrote a serious and exquisitely beautiful concerto. So those are both Buffalo Philharmonic projects, and we've got more coming up in the pipeline. We're going to be doing some more Kodály and some more Glier. So lots of good projects.
Well, I've gotten to hear many of those live at Klein Hans Music Hall. I saw the microphones hanging from the ceiling, kind of fingers crossed at the time.
Yes.
Could this be another CD? And indeed, it's great to hear that they will be. Joanne Folletta, music director of the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra, and one of Naxos's favorite go-to conductors, along with the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra. Joanne, thanks so much for this conversation all about this wonderful collaboration between William Walton, the composer, and the poet Edith Sitwell.
Thank you so much, Peter. This has been a lot of fun.
Lily O'Grady, silly and shady, longing to be a lazy lady, walked by the cupola's gables, in the lake's Georgian stables. In a fairy tale like the heat intense, in the mist, in the woods, when across the fence, the children gathering strawberries are changed by the heat into negresses, though their fair hair shines there like gold-held planets, Calliope, Io, Pomona, Antiope, Echo, and Cleo. Then Lily O'Grady, silly and shady, sauntered along like a lazy lady. Besides, the way her castle gown her dress was a satin, the color of shiny green ducks, and her folderol, parasols, and greatcoats, and other haycocks shiny. But she was a negress as black as the shade, her time on the brightest lady laid. Then a set of dark haired as trunks of trees began to flatter, began to tease. And she rattled the nails with golden foot that trampled the strawberry buttercup, and the thick old dew as bright as the mesh of dead Penelope's golden flesh. Then from the music whence was born Memphis at once, and the first heart born, and ran to wake in the lake where the water rose seemed hay to rake. And Charlatine, Madeline, round rose bubbling Victorine, and the other expressed some wish for elastic mantles and gowns with a swish as bright and slight as the posies of buttercups and of roses and buds of the wildwood lilies. They chase her as frisky as fillies. The red retriever has sat her, can whine and tease her and flatter. But Lily O'Grady, silly and shady, in the deep shade is a lazy lady. That broad-faced dead, Homer's red, Heliogabalus lost his head, and shade is on the brightest wing, and dust forbids the bird to sing.